Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The inaugural speech for the second term for an American president is a peculiar institution. It is part victory speech from the election, part wish list for the next 4 years, and the first moment for a president having won his final election to say goodbye. The excitement is diminished from President Obama's first inaugural. There is a sense of reality now, as though hard work matters more than mere celebration, a sentiment Abraham Lincoln seemed to express at his second inaugural.
At this second appearing to take the oath of the presidential office, there is less occasion for an extended address than there was at the first.
Thanks there to our friend Jeff Spurgeon from our sister station WQXR for playing Mr. Lincoln. A bloody war winding down but still with people dying, the nation embarked on a radical path of emancipation. There are surely some echoes today for America's 44th president. But in each case, a second inaugural is filled with sober assessments of political reality and less with the dreams of an untested leader. Kenneth C. Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, explains.
Clearly, the first inaugural is the chance to put my stamp on history. The second inaugural is, well, you do like me enough to bring me back. George Washington had the good sense to give the shortest second inaugural address in history, his second, 135 words. He said, so I'm here, I have to take this oath again, and if I've done anything wrong, you know, you can put me in jail.
you can imagine poor Washington's going, you know, we barely have a country here. Yeah, second inaugural, what?
So, by the way, that the first one was in New York, of course. Yeah. The second is in Philadelphia, and we know that Washington wore a brown suit of American manufacture. He was already making a political fashion statement by American. And he also carried a ceremonial sword. We've lost that part of the tradition. I don't know. Maybe we should bring that one back.
Well, with the way things are going, there may be ceremonial pistols with the inaugurals of the future in this century. The second inaugural is also an opportunity at certain points in history for extraordinary writing. That Lincoln's second inaugural is the bar.
Let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
Well, it is the bar, and Lincoln set up high bar with the first as well, which is those, if you have to pick the three greatest speeches in American history, probably all three of them are Lincoln's, the Gettysburg Address and the two inaugurals. FDR's first inaugural, of course, is also a memorable moment. His second inaugural, 1937, is also pretty notable as a second inaugural speech.
Well, here you really see a president or hear a president who feels very much in control.
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished. But it is not in despair that I paint that picture for you. I paint it for you in hope, because the nation, seeing and understanding the injustice of it, proposes to paint it out.
Well, here, the nation is really in need of a pep talk in the middle of the Depression.
Absolutely. And, of course, the last time in American history, unless things change, that a president might look forward to a third inaugural speech and a fourth, which, of course, Roosevelt did. But to many of these speeches, first of all, inaugural addresses in general, they're not the most memorable speeches. Very few of them reach that bar, the Lincoln bar, or even come close to it. Second inaugurals are even worse. There's always that been there, done that quality to it.
Well, you know, given that poll then between the extremely high-minded sort of Lincolnian speech and the very generic, I think, which is the general standard, the expectation – Barack Obama, it seems to me, has a pretty unique challenge here in the sense that no one would deny the history of his moment of ascension the first term. The second term, it's such a—I mean, everyone in America shares it, a palpable sense of coming down to earth. Now what are you going to say? It seems to me there's a lot of expectations in this speech, and I'm wondering if he goes quietly or thinks all legacy.
I think that FDR faced a little bit of that himself. You think about this moment that he comes in 1933, and the country needs hope and optimism and the idea that we only have to fear itself. 4 years later, he has to come back to them and say, we still have tremendous anxiety. Certainly, the country was a little bit better off 4 years later than it had been in 1933, but we were still in the midst of the Great Depression. And so he had to respond to that. So I think there are some interesting parallels there that Barack Obama could look to in terms of setting the standard.
It's a significant challenge because you have to basically acknowledge a work in progress, but inspire at the same time. Those seem almost incompatible.
They are incompatible, and it's up to a great speaker. And, you know, Barack Obama, for whatever other shortcomings or flaws he might have as president, is a wonderful speaker and can charge an audience. And we've seen that many times in his relatively brief mm-hmm. political career.
Well, he's got it in him. We definitely know.
The other point I think I would make also is about this, the historic nature. Yes, 2008 was clearly more historic, but we have a lot of interesting things coming together this year around this inaugural. First of all, it is the public inauguration. Of course, he would take the oath on Sunday in the White House privately, which means he'll take it four times, by the way.
Okay.
Four times in two terms, because he had to take it twice the first time. There were some mangling of words.
Right.
He's taking it this year on Sunday and publicly on Monday.
John Roberts will get a couple of rehearsals.
I think they might, you know, have a cheat sheet ready for them. But you know, it is Martin Luther King Day. And the White House announced that he'd be using Martin Luther King's Bible as well as a Lincoln Bible. So you have this, I think, still this overall overarching piece of American history that's at the background here. This African-American president taking the oath with Martin Luther King's Bible. There's now a monument to Dr. King on the Mall. And you can, if you cast your eye far enough, look down to the Lincoln Memorial. So all these things come together. We're thinking about Lincoln, obviously, these days because of the movie and his brilliance as a speaker and writer, and also the fact that we just had the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. So there's a lot of history kind of bubbling beneath the surface here that we tend to forget when we look at just the politics of the moment.
Certainly a compelling stage set for an inauguration that will certainly be the last one that Barack Obama will give. So it's historic in that sense. Kenneth C. Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History and Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.